Okay, everybody, we're back. So we're going to go to Parshas Kedoshim. Today is this week's a doubleheader Parsha, once again. It's called Achrei Maisen Kedoshim. Kedoshim means holiness in the plural. And the Torah is going to give us all kinds of advice of how we can be holy. Not surprisingly, a lot of it has to do with the things we do for other people. That's how we become holy, and that's how we become closer to Hashem. So the fifth reading begins when the two parashiyot are conjoined, in chapter 19, and verse 15. Initially, there's an enjoinder about justice, doing justice right, not to pervert or twist justice, not to show favoritism to one side or the other, for whatever reason, whether you're showing favoritism to the poor or to the wealthy. And then in verse 16, the Torah says, Lo selich rochel ba'amecha. You shall not be a gossip monger. And Rashi spends lots of time on this. What exactly that means, why le selich, why is it called rochel? But the focus of our class is going to be the second half of verse 16. For after telling us, Lo selich rochel ba'amecha, the Torah says, Lo samoid al damreyecha, do not stand by, literally, over your brother's blood. Ani Hashem, I am God. So many of the commentaries feel that there's a direct link and a continuation to the opening statement of this reading, which in a week when Kedoshim is read alone, then it's Sheni. It's where the second reading begins. And today it's where the fifth reading begins. But we start talking about being perverse in justice. We start talking about not being fair and not being impartial. So according to the Targum Yonasan, the verse continues to speak about justice. When it says, L'seil ch'rochel ba'amecha, when it says, do not be a talebearer or gossip monger, and then it says, L'samed al damriyecha, the Targum Yonasan ben Azil says, you might be in a situation where you know your yudeya z'chus l'chavede, you know something that could help somebody in their court situation, but you're afraid to open your mouth. Maybe his opponent will be angry. Maybe it's not politically correct. Maybe nobody will appreciate it if you say anything. You have various reasons why you would want to be silent. Most people prefer inactivity. Why get involved? Why get my hands dirty? Why make enemies? Why should people be frustrated with me? So I'm going to bow this out. I'm going to ignore it. But I know as a chus, I have something to say. I could actually defend this person who's now in the docket, but I choose not to. And that could even be a situation where there's somebody being judged for the most heinous or serious of crimes. You could save him. So according to the Targum Yonasan ben Azil, L'samed al damriyecha is referring specifically to a court situation. A person would be in a court situation. You could save him. You could help him. You choose not to. That's a sin. According to the Ibn Ezra, what we speak of here is association. He says, do not fall into the company of people who trifle with human life. And he says the truth is that when you're in a situation where you're connected to people who might threaten other people's lives, you never know what you can say that can actually cause harm to somebody. In World War II, there was an adage that they used in advertising. It said, loose lips sink ships, because the United States believed that there was German spies amongst the population, and probably there was. And when people would speak about the location of a ship, I mean, everything has changed vastly because of technology. But in those days, it could be a simple phone call, and a U-boat could find the ship. So this is like something similar. The Ibn Ezra says, if you're going to become friends with or you associate with mobsters, people who are, you know, not respectful of human life, and then the smallest thing you could say might end up getting somebody into very big trouble. So again, the Ibn Ezra sees this as a continuum. We start off with the court situation, we go to the talebearers, and we finally finish off, do not stand by idly while your brother's blood is being spilled. The Rashbam says, don't just stand there, but rather, you see somebody who's trying to kill somebody else, you should kill the would-be murderer. That means, l'samed l'dam reyecha. The person who's innocent is reyecha, he's your friend. He's your companion, your peer, your equal. The person who's trying to commit murder, ein le damim, he's a person who doesn't deserve to live anymore. That individual, that person, he or she has forfeited their right to live by trying to take somebody else's life. And how many of us would get involved in the fray? How many of us would jump in when somebody is chasing somebody else? I hope all of us, I don't know. It's a scary thing to do. Would you pull the trigger if you knew you could save somebody else's life? If you know that person is threatening somebody else's life? There was a story a number of years ago where there was a terrorist in Eilat, and after blowing some kind of botched bombing, the terrorist was trying to trigger another bomb as he was laying there, writhing in pain. He was shot, and he was trying to blow himself up yet again. So an Israeli police officer finished him off. And that's a mitzvah, because this is a person trying to kill innocent people. When somebody's trying to kill innocent people, you have a sacred duty to get rid of him. Now, it doesn't sound sacred and holy, but this, in fact, would be the moral thing to do. So that's the meaning of Lesama D'Adam Riecha. This is, I'm just sharing with you a little bit of a background. This is what some of the Yishonim say about Lesama D'Adam Riecha. And I want to focus now on what Rashi says. Because what Rashi says on the surface may seem simple, but as we will study the words of Rashi, you will discover some incredible profundity that's encoded into the words that were very carefully selected and chosen by Rashi. All right, so we're going to focus on the second half of the pasuk, right? Leisamed l'dam riecha. Rashi has lots to say about the idea of leisei l'chrochel ba'amecha. You shall not be a talebearer. And then Rashi says, what is the meaning of leisamed l'dam riecha? Which quite literally translates as don't stand on your brother's blood. Says Rashi, this means when your friend, when your companion, when your fellow is in danger. Lireis b'misasei, you see him dying, va'ata yochel ha'tzilei, but you could save him. But you can't be bothered. You don't save him. You don't do what you can do to save somebody else. And Rashi now, uncharacteristically, gives us a number of paradigms, of examples. Kigoin, for example, what is the meaning of Lisamoid al dam riecho? What does it mean to stand by as your brother's blood is being spilled? Meaning somebody's in danger and you're being unresponsive. So for example, Rashi says, Hateveya benohor, a person is drowning in the river. You see him drowning. You can jump in and save him. But you know, you don't want to get your shoes wet. I don't know. You don't want to be bothered. V'chaya ra oilistim boyim alav. And not only he's drowning in the river, and a wild animal, or perhaps people who act like animals, thieves, muggers, people are trying to rob him. Boyim alav are on the way, and they're coming to get him. That's basically a quote of the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Ayin Gimel, on page 73, side 1, and it's also mentioned in the Teres Karinim. So Rashi shares that. Rashi shares the what the Gemara in Sanhedrin says, and what the Teres Karinim says in the way to explain Leisamed L'dam Riecha. And it's interesting to note that Rashi does not explain these words syntactually as a continuation of what we read about earlier, of the idea of not being perverse in judgment. He does not necessarily connect this to the idea of leiselich rochil, because truth be told, in these verses of Parshas Kedoshim, there are oftentimes two or three mitzvahs or ideas articulated in a single verse. And even though there is oftentimes a connection between them, but Rashi still favors the simple, straightforward approach. So if leisamed l'dam riecha could be understood in a simple, straightforward way, and then you have a convoluted way of explaining it, but that would help you understand the cadence or continuation of the verses. Clearly, Rashi favors the latter, to explain this verse in the most straightforward way, to explain this commandment in the most straightforward way, even if it doesn't seem to fit into the general gist of the psukim that are unfolding before us. Because really, that's how these psukim are. That's how these verses are. Every half a verse is another mitzvah. So Rashi explains this as a standalone, l'samed l'dam riecha. Let's take a look in the Biurim book, and we're going to analyze this Rashi. And you will hear of an extraordinarily creative way of learning this Rashi. This is the way our Rebbe taught this Rashi, which is quite remarkable. Okay, so on page It would be 275, which is usually Reish Ayin Hey, but that spells evil, so they jumbled the numbers here. They wrote Ayin Reish Hey in the page numbers instead of the Gaon. It's pretty interesting that the page number of evil came out of Lesamid al Dam Reyachar. Anyway, it's Simin Ches, it's the eighth little chapter in Parshas Kedeshim in the Biurim book. And Rashi notes that Mekoidim, the Rebbe notes Mekoidim Shul Divri Rashi, the source of these words of Rashi, are B'divri Chazal, in the words of our sages. What are we speaking about? In the Gemara I mentioned was Dafa in Gimel, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, as well as in the Teres Koidim. However, the Rebbe notes, when you look in the sources, you will see that Rashi's comment and the sources are actually very different. Rashi deviates from the sources. And we know that if Rashi deviates from the sources, there's got to be a very good reason. Why does Rashi deviate from the sources? Well, first let's see how he deviates. Number one, Lashon Chazal, the language of our sages is, Shehu Chayiv Lahatziloi. That's how the Gemara puts it. That you are obligated. Chayav means obligated. It's not optional. You must. Chayiv Lahatziloi. You must save him. Or, in the Teres Koinim, Chayiv Ata Lahatziloi. So both in the Gemara and Sanhedrin, as well as the Teres Koinim, the word Chayav, the word obligated, necessary, required, that shows up. But Rashi doesn't say that. In his commentary on the words L'samad L'dam Riachim, Rashi simply says, V'ata Yochoil Lahatziloi. You are able. You're able to do this. He doesn't say you're obligated to do this. He says you're able to do this. Obvious question. Why does Rashi deviate from the language our sages use? Why does Rashi not say you're obligated? Why instead does he use the syntax, you're able, you're capable, it's within your reach? Number one. Number two, the instances which are quoted by Rashi, the paradigms here. So Rashi gives us three ideas, three situations in which a person's life is in danger and you might be able to help. Doesn't say you're obligated to help. Rashi says you might be able to help. You can help. You're able to help. The three cases are the person who's drowning, the person who's being attacked by wild animals, and the person who's being mugged by lethal robbers, robbers who seek money or your life, and they're serious. So Chazal make a distinction between the three paradigms. They use the word oy. Oy tevea benor, or he's drowning. Oy chayer gerasa, or a wild animal has grabbed hold of him. You know, you see a person being dragged by a lion, that's pretty scary stuff. Or a third example, the person's being accosted. And that's how it is. That's how it is in the Gemara, that's how it is in the Teres Koinim. But Rashi changes one of the oys, and instead of aleph vav or oy or, he puts in a vav. Vav means vav achibu. Vav means and. Big difference in and. You know, sometimes in English people write and slash or. It's a big difference. And is not or is not and. Oy means or. It's a second option. Another thing. And means in addition to. You're adding on. It's an add-on. So Rashi says, does not actually divide this into three separate paradigms. Rashi says, Teveya benohar, the person might be drowning. And then he says, Vichaya oiro listem olav, and a wild animal or robbers are on the way. So from Rashi's way, the way he frames it, it seems like he's drowning and there's a wild animal. He's drowning and there's robbers. Why does Rashi do that? Like what he, so as if Rashi necessitates that we have two issues, two challenges going on at the same time. He's drowning and, or he's drowning and. Like, why would he do that? Especially when he's changing. If that would be the language of the Gemara, so okay, fine, so Rashi just follows the syntax of our sages. But he changes to the syntax of our sages. The obvious question is why. So the Rebbe offers what could really only be called an extraordinarily creative interpretation and an understanding of this. He suggests the following. Number one, L'das Rashi, from Rashi's perspective and the manner in which Rashi chooses to explain these verses, Ein makom lefarash shekavanas hakosuv kan, What Rashi is trying to say, first and foremost, this is not an ordinary situation of saving a life. This is not about life saving, at least not in a typical way. Shekain, b'mikra kazeh, had this verse just told us it's a mitzvah to save somebody's life, it should say it bilshoin chiyuvis. It should have said it in a positive framework. It should have said something like hatzil tatzil esreyechem. Like when it says giving tzedakah, nosin titin, you'll surely give. Poseach tiftach es yadcha, you surely open your hand. Here you want to say a person's being saved, say, surely you'll save a person. It's a mitzvah to save a life. Surely you'll save a life. Hatzel tatzel. It doesn't say that though. It doesn't tell us, it's not what we should do, like telling us give tzedakah, show consideration. It doesn't say that. Instead, what does it say? Don't stand by. It's not a do, it's a don't. Here's Torah telling you what not to do instead of telling you what to do, which is very odd. Why wouldn't the Torah come along and say, you must save your friend's life? If you would read this verse, maybe casually, and somebody said to you, what did you just read? What would you say? I read it's a mitzvah to save a life. Maybe it's not what it says. It doesn't say mitzvah to save a life. It says, loy samait, don't stand by, don't watch idly. Why does the Torah frame it that way? So therefore, Rashi then has to explain that this is talking about something, an unusual situation. A situation of, as he puts it, teveya benohar v'chaya. A person's drowning and a wild animal is coming, or listen by umalov. Okay, so the Rebbe begins to explain now the distinction between teveya benohar, between the person who's drowning, and the situation of listim or chayas, wild animals or bad people on the way. Drowning in the river, mahava dugma muvhokis lemikra shaboy sikui haatzola heim mitzuyonim. When we speak of a person who is drowning, we speak here of a situation where it's pretty easy to size up the possibilities of whether you can or cannot save this person. So, for example, you see a person is drowning and you don't know how to swim. Should you jump in the water to save him? Very bad idea. Why? Because instead of one person drowning, two people will drown. If you have a life raft, should you throw him a life raft? Was that a question? If you have one of those hooks like they have in the swimming pool, which can hook a person, you know, hook him on his armpits and pull him, is that a question you should do that? What's the question? Should you jump in and save him? If you took advanced life-saving, you certainly should. If you know you're a really good swimmer, or you see that this person is not stronger than you, certainly you should get in. It's very easy to size up that situation. It's a terrifying situation. Your phone might get wet, I understand. But you know, life's to be saved. You do what you got to do. Amnam, k'chosev shel ha'teveya, einim eimdum lo'y lehi'ovek begali anar. Clearly, the person who's drowning does not have the ability to overcome the waves of the current. But the friend, he's standing on dry land. He's got all his wherewithal together. He can figure out a way to save him. Maybe it's something as simple as call 911. I don't know. Throw him a rope. Figure out a way to save him. B'mikra kazeh, moving me'elav, shekeyam eschoyve lahatzel sateveh. In such a situation, is there even a question? If the Torah wouldn't come and say, you know, you should save somebody's life. If the Torah wouldn't say that, you'd say, well, I saw a person drowning in the river. So what'd you do? Well, I thought about it. I was thinking. And what happened then? I was thinking. What happened to the person? Well, he drowned. Why did he drown? I was thinking about what to do. Yiddishkeit, nobody asked you to think. You could think also. Well, that's the most important thing in Judaism. Do. Action. What are you thinking? Do. You got to do what you got to do. So if a person sees somebody drowning, go ahead and do what you can. You do. It's not required. The Torah doesn't have to tell us this. This would be what you call elementary, my Watson. Like, of course. Of course. Save a life. Who wouldn't save a life? But the Torah clearly is telling us something profound. So what is the Torah saying? The Torah is saying that in addition to this person drowning, there's a situation where chaya ilistim boyim alav. Now chaya ilistim boyim alav is a little bit different than a situation where somebody is drowning in the river. Because when you see a wild animal attacking a person, or you see people who look like wild animals attacking a person. Well, at this situation, the possibilities of saving that individual are doubtful. Well, certainly, there's a danger that you may have to expose yourself to. V'kayem chshash kaved. There is a very heavy concern. Shalezu b'vad. Shaliyala b'yadu l'hatzlas chaveri. Not only will you not be able to help the other, elisha b'sefer davar yiplu shneim. Both of you may end up in the same situation, heaven forfend, between falling into the jaws of this wild animal or the hands of these monsters. So what about such a situation? In such a situation, you are certainly not obligated to go and lay your own life on the line. Because corresponding to the danger that that person's in is the danger that you're going to be in a moment. There's this silly joke, they say this biker guy comes to heaven and the big angels come and greet him and say, did you do anything extraordinary in your life? He says, well, I did one thing really wonderful in your life. He said, what was that? He said, there was an innocent woman, and I saw a bunch of bikers run over, and they began to harass her, and it was like, I jumped in the middle, and I punched the ringleader, and the Malach says, when did this happen? The guy said, about 5 minutes ago. So like, you know, when your life's going to be in danger, somebody with a loaded gun. So any shooting at somebody, well, just stop with your bare hands. Should you do that, or should I stay hiding? That's not simple at all. In fact, I want you to know that a person is actually not required to put his own life in danger, to risk his own life. It would be the noble thing to do, but I can't tell you have to do it. You didn't run into the building? Is a person, the building's on fire? You didn't run in? So, no, I didn't run in. Why didn't you run in? The building's on fire, that's why. You know how many firefighters died in 9/11 because they ran in? That's not simple at all. And firefighters are great heroes. They're people actually who do put their lives on the line. But to go and say that everybody's obligated to be a firefighter or everybody's obligated to put themselves in danger, you can't say that. You could say that's heroics. That's why it's heroics, because I'm not obligated. The person who did what he's obligated to do is not a hero. He's just a decent person. The person is drowning in the river and you could throw him a lifeline. You're not a hero. You're a mensch. You're a normal person. Who wouldn't do that? But the person whose life's in danger and you ran into the epicenter of that storm and risked your own life, wow, it's unbelievable. Yeah, you have guts and courage. That's a hero.
But that's not against the halacha, right?
It's not against the halacha if there's a good chance of you saving him. If there's like zero chance of you saving him, it could be it is. It could be that's like suicide. It's not simple at all. Let's say there's a good chance of you saving him, but your own life's in danger. That's a hero. So what then is the Torah talking about? Do you understand the conundrum that this verse puts us in? If it's easy and it's possible to save a life, what is the Torah telling us? If I'm not able to save a life without putting myself in danger, is that what the Torah obligates me to do? Am I required necessarily to risk my own life? I don't know. No, we seem not. So then what is the Torah talking about? Which situation? This is a very profound question. In other words, the Rebbe has uncovered the real issue of this verse. The real issue here is, how do you understand the verse altogether? What is the verse saying even? This is one of the most basic verses, I think, in biblical literature. This is second only to that verse of love your fellow as yourself. And everybody can quote that verse. And that's, by the way, the next passage. That's one verse ahead. Everybody knows that verse. But there's also a verse, do not stand by idly where your brother's blood is being spilled. And there were many of our own brethren who did stand by during the Holocaust and didn't do anything, even though they could have. Or they could have tried. This is a given. This is obvious. Does the Torah need to tell you that? This is like a big, huge act of righteousness. You're a big tzaddik. You saved somebody's life when you could. On the contrary, if you have the opportunity to save somebody's life and you actually save somebody's life, you should be thanking Hashem that you did it. You'll be grateful to God for having that opportunity. You wouldn't go around thinking how great I am. So the Rebbe, therefore, comes along and says, Rashi must be answering this question. Because that's what Rashi does. He explains verses that otherwise don't really seem to make sense to us. Hamikra she'el of Mesiachas HaKosovu. The Pasuk, the verse here is addressing the following situation. A shiluv of shnei mikrim. This is a conjunctive paradigm. a paradigm in which we have an amalgamation of two different kinds of situations. It's not exactly drowning in a river, and it's not exactly the wild animals or the robbers. It's not exactly either. Rather, it's somewhere in between or conjunctive. Medubar b'mikra sha'adam mutal b'sakana mishnei kivuyim. You see a situation where a person is in mortal danger. But the mortal danger that this person's in comes from two sides. Number one, hutevei b'nahar. Number one, he's drowning. U'be'esu ba'ina achas, at the same time as he's drowning, u'metukaf al yedei chaya oylistim. He is also being attacked by wild animals or by robbers. At the same time. B'mikra kazeh, k'chol sha'adavar negei l'sakana d'sheina, as whatever this is the first situation, the drowning situation is concerned, sikuy hatzolim gevayim. There's a very high possibility, high chance of being able to save him. Ach biyachas l'sakana shniyah, but with regard to the second situation, sikuy hatzolim utolim b'safek rav. There's a lot of concern, a lot of doubt whether or not you actually could or can save him. And this is life's most perplexing choices. What do I do at this time? This is not a simple choice. A simple choice, save him when you could save him, that's not a perplexing question. What's the question? Save him. Save him and put your own life in danger? I don't know if that's a perplexing question. That's a question of whether you're a hero or not. A question of whether you're an extraordinary person. It's not a perplexing question of life. What's a perplexing question? A question where I have a situation. Yesh eifim makim l'safik. Am I obligated to save a person? Go out of my way. It's going to be uncomfortable for me, but to save a life from the first sakana, from the first situation. But by doing this, I'm opening up a whole new front. I'm going to open up a whole new situation of danger. He's drowning. Once I save him, then there's the wild animals to deal with. Then I have the robbers to deal with. And then I might be in danger. So therefore, I have a serious question now. And the question is, the perplexing question is, should the person go out of his way, do everything possible, save him from the first situation? Even though this may put him later on into a dangerous situation. So the mob threw the guy into the Hudson River. You could save him now. They didn't fit him with cement sneakers. Okay, he's not going for a deep walk. And they didn't manage to insert a bullet in his head first. They just threw him in the Hudson River. You're going to pull him out, but the mob's standing by. What happens later? Do they attack you too? Do they attack him? But the guy's drowning. Yeah, I know he's drowning, but you know, there's those guys in trench coats up there. Like, you sure I want to save this guy? You sure I want to get involved there? The Torah comes along, according to Rashi, and says, Lesamed Adam Riecha, you have no right to stand by idly. You could save this person right now. You must save him. In this very unique kind of situation. It's not a typical situation. Because a typical situation is actually black and white. It is actually overt and obvious. But this situation is anything but overt and obvious. You would say, in this situation, maybe you know what? I don't know what to do. So I'm just going to excuse myself. It's an excuse me. I'm not going to do anything. Because whatever I do is I'm making more trouble. I'm opening Pandora's box to the next level. A guy is drowning, I'm going to save the person. Save the person, these monsters are there. Or these wild animals that made the person run into the river to begin with, they're coming. I don't know if I should get involved there. So Rashi comes along and says, Lo samayit, you have no right to recuse yourself from getting involved. Alecha l'dasef, you have to know. Shekaloid medubar, b'mikra shata yochel atzili, as long as you can do something. But who says this will help? I'll do something and then there's a next problem. And then for sure I don't know what to do. Can you do something now? If you can do something now, you can save him from the first situation. You don't know what you'll be able to do in 5 minutes after the first, but now you can do something. A yid should not be making calculations. You're not playing chess now. Now your situation is to react in the immediate. If I can save the life now, but if I save the life now, what will happen afterwards? Then anyway, I can't save him. That's not your job. That's not your business. That's God's calculation. Your situation is you can save him now. Then you must do this. Even if there might be some form of danger lurking around the corner, I'll save him and then who knows what happens next. You have to live in the immediate. When it comes to saving a life, you should not be the ultimate strategist. When it comes to saving a life, not you shouldn't kill him. Of course you shouldn't kill him. So don't think I can sit this one out. Since anyway, it doesn't look like there's going to be a long-term possibility of saving the life, Torah comes along and says, Lo samoid, do not stand by. Do whatever is necessary, and the rest is the Rebbeinu Shalom's Keshman. That's the rest is in God's hands. But what's in your hands, you must do 100%. There's much more to say, but we're out of time. So l'chaim.